This is a CNA podcast.
Describe the outlook for Singapore Airlines over the next 2 years.
Our outlook is grim, but some bounce back because of rationalization of fleet and cost structure.
The question was 2 year outlook rather than say 5 year outlook.
Right. But
it's going to take more than 2 years. No, no. I mean, some of that is more, I think, the bounce back will be after 2 years, a lot of it.
No, it could. Like, you're currently 8%. 8% to 20% is a bounce back. You don't expect tourism to open for 2 years?
That's a whole other debate. No, I would hope that there would be a partial reopening, but it will be very slow and very small.
But so 8% to 20% is a bounce back, right? Not to the original level, but from the depths.
Yeah. Well, I think a bounce back is, yeah, it's partial bounce back, yeah.
Yeah, partial bounce back. Yeah, it definitely will be rationalized. I think SI is going to be a smaller airline in the near future for sure.
Well, it is already much smaller. It will also be smaller for the medium to long term because it's, aircraft like the A380 will be parked for several years probably.
And some would be let go.
Yeah, the older airplanes, ones. Yeah.
I'm Lin Su Ling and welcome to Heart of the Matter. News of Singapore's national carrier SIA has dominated headlines all week, and all of it was dismay. From layoffs in the thousands to staggering losses amounting to millions each month. Since COVID-19 appeared 6 months ago, the global aviation industry has been brought to its knees. Experts are predicting extended pain at least for the next few years. Airlines like Qantas, British Airways and Cathay Pacific are in similarly dire straits despite huge cash infusions from respective governments. Today, we want to go into a deep dive and ask some tough questions. How much cash is needed to prop up the business that has ground to a halt? Should a symbol of national pride and prestige be protected no matter the cost? And will this pandemic prompt a larger rethinking about whether countries need national carriers in the first place? If so, what would they look like seeing how vulnerable they are in a crisis like this one? Our guests today to unpack these issues with us are Nitin Bangarkar, Associate Professor at the NUS Business School and author of Flying High in a Competitive Industry, Singapore Airlines.
Hello.
And Brendan Sobey, founder of Singapore-based independent aviation consulting and analysis firm Sobey Aviation.
Hi, nice joining you today.
Hi, Brendan. Hi, Nitin.
Hi.
Now, just to start off, maybe thinking about the news this week, 4,300 layoffs in SIA and also trainee pilots being dropped. Seeing as how cases are still resurgent, infections around the world and border openings are unpredictable even, do you expect further cuts by SIA and other national carriers going forward?
This is just the beginning. Unfortunately, this is a very long crisis, and there's been several cuts already in the last several months from several airlines, and Singapore Airlines only did their first staff cut just last week, actually. The reason why they were later than many other airlines was the wage subsidies were helping SIA maintain staffing levels initially, but the wage subsidy scheme is being reduced and eventually will be cut off entirely, and the reality is that this is going to be a few years before any airline, including Singapore Airlines, is able to go back to pre-COVID levels in terms of capacity and in terms of realistic staff counts. So unfortunately, the decision was inevitable and there could be more to come from SIA as well as other airlines, given that the cut was only 20% initially.
I want to ask Nitin to weigh in, but before that, Brendan, how much deeper do you expect? Is the 4,300 really just the tip of the iceberg?
It's hard to say because they'll have to continue to review the pace of the recovery in the next several months. And there is a continuing wage scheme at a reduced level for another 6 months. So I would say that, once that scheme ends and depending on where we are with the market and demand, they could review it. But just to put into context, the 20% cut at the airline level, so that's 20% of airline positions, does not include SIA engineering, for example, which is still to come probably in terms of cuts. Other airlines around the region, cuts are 30% or more. Those are airlines that have domestic markets, so they're actually in a little bit better shape now. So relatively speaking, it's small, although obviously it's still painful and large in terms of the sheer numbers. And there is a possibility it'll be more for SIA. And you also start to see cuts around SIA. So other companies that supply to SIA, for example, like SATS and SIA Engineering, just two examples of many.
I hope there aren't too many more. Couple of reasons, because SIA has been known to reduce salaries, asking people to take no pay leave and things like that. So that's one thing which could cushion a little bit. I mean, if you take 20% across the board no pay leave, then that reduces the need for layoffs as such, eliminating positions. The other thing is, I think cutting labor cost is only part of the solution. It's not going to solve the problem. That's other factors. Labor cost for SI is probably about max 20% of the revenues. But there's other, like the plane sitting idle and so on, parking landing charges and stuff like that. I'm hoping that they'll open up the sector soon, so maybe the revenue will bounce back. It's going to be a tough few months, but SI is a good employer, so I hope not too many more.
So, Brendan, I just want to go back to your point about how the outlook hasn't been very good for SIA, but they have cost corrected. So they've made these cuts in capacities in flights. They've reviewed their cost structures. They've reviewed their flight structures even. Passenger planes are being converted for cargo. Are you more sanguine, though? Because even though the job support scheme has helped them tide over the last couple of months, the fact also is that it has given them enough time to make these changes.
They have done a lot of things and they continue to do things. In fact, a major review is only going to be completed over the next couple of months where they'll be looking at network and fleet size and further adjustments in other areas. And they also continue to negotiate with suppliers to try to cut costs. And indeed, the employee costs are only about 17-18% of the total cost at SIA. So it's only part of the equation. All the things that you mentioned are very positive, but they've only done a small amount, relatively speaking, given the revenue hole that SIA is now in. So cargo is up, but cargo yields are now softening, and it's only a relatively small portion of the overall business. And the flight cuts they've done, but that actually reflects that they're 90% down, and staff cuts are only 20%. So there is a gap there. So again, there's a way to maybe hold it off a bit longer and hope that gap narrows over the next 6 months to avoid additional layoffs. And that certainly would be the hope. But in reality, it may or may not happen. And if that gap doesn't narrow, inevitably, they will have to look at cutting more staff, unfortunately. It's too early to speculate too much on that. I'm just saying that there's a pretty big gap there and that over the next several months, something has to give, basically.
So looking at the big picture perspective, Nitin, do you think that more financial support for investors from even government will be needed for SIA and even national carriers to right through this whole process?
I don't know the month-by-month figure. So the first few months itself, they burned 50% of the cash that they raised, I think. Hopefully, the burn will be slower and they might need some more money, but hopefully not the scale at which they needed money the last time, I think. The government really paid through Temasek. The government didn't pay. The Temasek bought, and the shareholders bought the shares. So it's not really government money other than the concessions in parking landing charges.
But that's the thing. Like, when does it become excessive? So they, like you mentioned, Temasek has provided huge support. They've issued 15 billion shares in bonds that are being underwritten by them. A dedicated 4 billion bridging loan from DBS is made available to SIA. But also, SIA, like you mentioned, Brendan, has been strongly supported by the job support scheme and other aviation support packages that the government themselves have rolled out. So the question is, when does it become excessive? When is support too much?
I don't think it's excessive so far. And actually, I don't think they will need any more in the next year, at least.
Why is that?
Well, because they've raised $11 billion and plus have a convertible option for another $6 billion next year, which puts it over $17 billion. They also can raise more privately, which they have with using unencumbered aircraft, for example, which they've raised already some additional money that way, and they can continue to raise that amount if possible. When they said that they've used half of the amount, that's the Temasek rights issue. It's not the full 11. It's only the Temasek part of it, which is 8-something. That's not burn. That's a lot of that is actually one-offs. So it's not like they've burn through it, like in terms of monthly needs over the first 5 months of the crisis. Most of that actually is one-off items. They're probably going to be losing about $3 billion in this fiscal year, but you know, a lot of that has already been recognized through the fuel hedging surplus losses, which basically they've had a forward recognize what they're going to be losing in fuel hedging for the full year. So they've already actually taken over $1 billion hit on that specifically. So a lot of the bigger items have been already recognized. There are some other bigger items coming up restructuring-wise, like A380 write-down, for example. When you look at the $11 billion they've raised so far, plus the convertible $6 billion, which they have the flexibility to raise next year, then that pushes it up to an amount that should be sufficient for a few years, particularly given that after a year, hopefully, we'll start seeing a recovery. They're not going to be profitable for a few years, but the loss rate will continue to reduce.
But that's the thing. The loss rate is being reduced, and it's not just private money. It's also public money. Let's take a quick break, but we'll be right back after these messages.
Hi, everyone. My name is Jamie Ho, and I host the Climate Conversations on CNA. Each week, I sit down with one expert to try to break it all down to get a better understanding of the global warming threat facing our world, so we can find the inspiration to take meaningful action and keep the conversation going. So download or stream wherever you get your podcasts on CNA, Spotify or Apple Podcasts, and subscribe so you don't miss an episode. Read breaking news, explainers and analysis under our climate change section on cna.asia.
We're back on Heart of the Matter. So Brendan, throwing this over to you, right? Do you think government aid is making a huge difference when you look at the airlines that are coming out of this looking better recapitalized or not?
It's made a huge difference so far. I mean, and most countries have supported their airline sectors. And it's not only government-owned carriers. It's a lot of privately-owned carriers as well. Or some airlines have become government-owned or partially government-owned again because equity has changed due to the cash that's come in from the governments. It's really been the difference between airlines surviving and airlines not surviving. In fact, if you look at the few countries that haven't provided the support, like Colombia, like Mexico, just to name a couple of examples, Latin America has been actually behind every other region in providing support to their airlines during this crisis. And you've had most of the major airline bankruptcies have actually been in the Latin America region. So if governments did not step up, we would have seen bankruptcies everywhere. And this has made the situation more manageable. Of course, it's still a challenging situation because this crisis is long. And in many cases, airlines haven't gotten enough money to survive, say, a three-year downturn. They've only gotten enough money maybe to last the first year. So they're going to have to go back to the governments next year. In SIA's case, because they have more money than anyone else in Asia in terms of what they've raised and what they've gotten from the government, I don't think that will be an issue.
But how much do economic considerations versus emotional, even nationalistic sentiments shape these decisions as to whether to support national carriers? I mean, many people fear that their nations will remain irrelevant if they abandon their money-losing flag airlines. But could that be an outmoded way of thinking?
Inefficient carriers you should let go. So if somebody loses money perpetually, I think there is a case that can be made that forget about this. In this crisis, that's not the case for at least some airlines. Like SIA is not an inefficient carrier, so or a money-losing carrier. If it was a money-losing carrier, I think I would not support Air India, for instance, because it has never made money in crisis or no crisis, or it has rarely made money.
Are you smiling because of, that's something that we don't, Brendan?
I actually generally agree with that, but it's not reality because some of the weakest airlines are getting bailed out. And some airlines that would have struggled this year even without the crisis, including several airlines in Asia, in a normal scenario, it would have been questionable whether they would have been bailed out again because they wouldn't have had the excuse of COVID. But now with the excuse of COVID, almost all of them are virtually getting bailed out. And the argument can be made that it's time to pull the plug, but that's a very difficult argument to be made.
But I wasn't making that argument for COVID, right? That's exactly the point, that in normal times, you could pull the plug. And in there is a differentiation that needs to be made between, even in normal times, between bad airlines and good airlines. And bad airlines you should let go and good airlines you should support. That was exactly the point.
But isn't the point also that such government support will necessarily slow down the consolidation of the airline industry? Ultimately, when you mentioned, Brendan, that there are such airlines that need to be winnowed away and government aid is sort of still supporting them, yeah. Isn't that a problem?
And this has been a problem actually in Asia for many years where there's been a lack of consolidation due partially to governments continuing to bail out airlines. And these airlines, time and time again, have been bailed out. And even without COVID, there's been a barriers to consolidation because of this. And consolidation would be a healthy outcome like we've seen in Europe and North America, but we haven't seen in Asia. Other issues like cross-border ownership restrictions also are a huge barrier to consolidation. And until those are lifted, it's hard to see significant consolidation in this region. Some people might hope that this crisis is a trigger to change some of these and to lift those barriers. But realistically, I just don't think it's going to happen. And we're going to have
Why is that, though? Why not let foreign airlines fill these gaps ultimately? Because when countries are so skittish about granting all these privileges or letting other foreign airlines land and take up all these flight slots, why is it that skittishness?
It's a very good point. It's just this nationalistic concern, and governments still feel that there's a need for a flag carrier. Some countries have domestic markets they're trying to protect, but other countries just have this kind of ego or pride thing going, and it's very difficult to let go an airline, particularly like in a country like India where there's private sectors. It's not only just foreign airlines. It's sometimes the private sector airlines are ready to fill the void, but they still don't want to pull the plug.
In the recent past, there has been the traffic has been growing quite a bit. It hit the problem a little bit. That is going to be exposed in this crisis when after the subsidies, etc., are over, the inefficient airlines will lose heaps of money. And that's when I think some of the tough decisions will be made. Inefficient airlines are there in many parts of the world, right? So I think that's a fact of life. In the case of Singapore, I think that because that connectivity is so important, I don't know whether probably in an ideal state, yes, foreign airlines can fill the gap, but you don't know. And you can't say, we'll see how it works out, because that connectivity is important, because it has a multiplier effect, you know, and because of tourism and everything.
I just want to move also into costs. Banks obviously make their own commercial decisions, but are you worried about contagion to the financial sector, especially when a lot of these airlines are borrowing huge amounts of bridging loans?
There is a debt issue. So the airlines are taking on a lot of debt right now. Some of it is government-backed or government-guaranteed, and a lot of it is in the private sector. And this will be an issue over the next many years, because even when airlines return to profitability, which we hope will happen in 4 years, although that's hardly certain, they will have so much debt that it will be quite difficult to pay that back. And we could see more airline casualties over a 5-10 year period because of this.
That sounds very scary, Nathan. Do you think this will happen in Singapore?
I don't know what the exposure of the banks, the percentage exposure of the banks is to the airline sector. So if the percentage exposure is large, I think that could be a problem. But in Singapore, the biggest issue is the housing loans. So if the housing takes a tumble, and then that's a problem, because I think the portfolio is large. Even if they lose 4 billion, I think DBS can take it in its stride. And
so just moving on to when governments do give this aid to airlines, how can they ensure that this aid is a responsible use of public funds? Because some would argue that even though SIA has received a lot of help, it hasn't really stemmed the flood of retrenchments. And in Singapore, other companies like Jumbo, Etonhouse, even Commonwealth Capital have had to absorb SIA's staff. So clearly, there's a concerted effort all around to support the fallout. But what safeguards can be put in place to ensure that there's a prudent use of public monies?
You can't preserve each and every job, you know. There are conditions change, and I think job loss could be a fact of life. So as long as you think that it is due care has been taken and they're doing something that is in the best interest of long-term survival, I think it's okay. We can't protect each and every job. Loss of jobs and creating new jobs is a part of this dynamic process.
But Brendan, when you look at this, right, some of the aid packages come with conditions. Could you walk us through some of that, that also ensures that the use of funds is channeled towards a certain purpose and it helps to recapitalize airlines?
Well, it really depends on the country, and some countries have more strings attached than others. And in some cases, governments have proposed such conditions that are so onerous that airlines have decided to not take the government money and try to raise money in the private sector. So, but in Singapore's case, there's not really many conditions. I mean, obviously, they received the government wage subsidy, which amounted like $40 million a month, which helped prevent job losses in the first several months of the crisis. And that's not even part of the $11 billion that they've raised. That's an additional few hundred million there. But the rest of it, a lot of it is not direct from the government. It's Temasek, which is more indirect. And Temasek's obviously the major shareholder, so they have interests on the board and so forth. And it's about the overall strategy, I think. And it's about maintaining connectivity and maintaining the Singapore hub. Because if you lost SIA and were served by foreign airlines, you would have maybe a sufficient capacity in terms of for Singaporeans to leave and for visitors to come, but you would lose a lot of the transit. And because of the volumes wouldn't be there, you'd lose a lot of the destinations that Singapore Airlines Group had, almost 140 destinations before this crisis. And it, hopefully they'll get back up to that in a few years. Without a national airline, you'd lose a lot of those destinations. So it's really about the connectivity and about the importance of the hub to the Singapore economy. And I think that will be maintained even without kind of some strings attached to the money that's given to SIA. I don't think that's necessary in SIA's case.
Yeah, but don't you think that moral hazard needs to be tackled? Because some people are saying that bailouts are problematic because they incentivize flag carriers to take excessive business risks because they have alternative sources of funding. So how do we ensure that these aid from government doesn't give investors a free ride?
Well, again, it varies on the country. So in some countries, maybe there's more of a concern, you know, and taxpayers may be a bit more vocal about this. In those countries, there's been a lot of stipulations and a lot of debate. And in some cases, as airlines come back to the table for more money next year or the year after, some countries might decide not to give more money to the airline sector because of what the public is thinking, and also because the situation with their economies might be quite serious, and they have a lot of things to address, other sectors to help out. So airlines might not get what the attention they got in the initial phase into this crisis in the first few months, which was quite significant attention and priority for a good reason, because you can't just like all of a sudden pull out essential connectivity. It would have been disastrous. But in the long term, some of these countries will look at this more closely and we will have some impact, I think.
So you mentioned connectivity, and I want to bring in Nitin into this conversation about what the value of national carriers are. The thing also is that people think that national carriers are there a fail-safe to help bring back, say, Singaporeans who are overseas, you know. But during the COVID-19, when foreign carrier flights like Qatar Airways were the ones helping to also repatriate Singaporeans back to Singapore, what critical role do you think national carriers are playing that foreign carriers cannot?
I think those rescue flights can be arranged, you know. If you pay enough, then somebody will run a flight for you, right? So I think the rescue flights are only a very small part of the story. Singapore, if you see, tourism is what, about 7-8% of the economy, right? So that's a good chunk, right? A whole lot of like the hotels and all the other sort of tourism related things depend on that. The business travel was a part of Singapore being a RHQ, or in some cases HQ, right, for many businesses. Even in the value chain, when Singapore is not a RHQ, Singapore plays an important part, partly because the connectivity is good. So the national carrier ensures that connectivity. As I said, you might get the same connectivity without a national carrier, but you don't know. And if you find out and later discover that dependence on a bunch of foreign carriers doesn't get you that, that's a counterfactual, which is something we do not observe. And it's very hard to say what will happen. Will we get the same connectivity? It's very difficult to say. So I think you are dealing with a devil you know, which is that I would rather ensure that this connectivity and tourism sector is supported.
Right? So I just want to start the round off. I'm trying to get a sense of whether you think the role of national carriers at the end of the day after COVID-19 is being rethought by national governments, or do you think that because governments have poured in billions of dollars of aid, that they will actually double down on saving their national carriers after this whole COVID-19 is over? What's your take?
I think it's more the latter. I mean, we've seen a renationalization of some airlines. We've seen airlines become critical in countries that maybe they weren't being supported before, or weren't really seen as being critical, or weren't a priority by the government. But then we have countries like Singapore where they have always been critical, and they continue to be critical. The role of national airlines has increased. I mean, there was a big debate actually prior to this crisis about government subsidies, especially for the Middle East carriers. And it was a very highly publicized debate with, you know, the U.S. carriers attacking the Middle East. And now all of a sudden, the U.S. airlines are getting bailout money to a staggering amount. And the Middle East carriers are just continuing what they've always been doing, which is continuing to get supported by the government. And Qatar Airways has been the biggest international airline during this crisis in terms of the number of international passengers carried, because they have kept up their network and have been very keen to carry repatriating passengers. So in markets like Australia, they have become the largest international airline, way above Qantas, for example. Qantas basically just shut down everything, and Qatar Airways has been carrying almost all the Australians home. The whole thing has changed. People will recognize Qatar Airways' position and other airlines' position during this crisis, and the debate will be different after the crisis, and airlines like Qatar might actually find it easier to get traffic rights in places like Canada and Australia, where they were really struggling to get traffic rights before this crisis. So it's quite an interesting turn of events.
If the governments are giving money, they might, in some cases, might as well take the equity stake. But over the long term, I think if you have the money, you can throw at airlines. But in some cases, the government may not even have the money to throw at the airlines. And in that case, there will be hard choices made, right? In Singapore's case, I think they have a good amount of money. So maybe they can. And it is more essential to Singapore probably than many other countries.
Well, there you have it from the experts, the big challenges facing national carriers during a global pandemic, the aid they're getting, and perhaps a bit of the rethinking of their role underway, or maybe a doubling down. This has been Heart of the Matter. That was Nitin Pangarkar, Associate Professor at the NUS Business School and author of Flying High in a Competitive Industry, Singapore Airlines, and Brendan Sobey, founder of Singapore-based independent aviation consulting and analysis firm Sobey Aviation. Thanks to our team, Crispina Robert, our podcast editor, and research writer, Evan Lowe. Until next time, I'm Lin Suling, signing off.